This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Welcome to the Friday Pitch-In. Coming up, we'll hear from the state's oldest employee, at least for another week. DNR surveyor Bob Vollmer is retiring next Thursday at the age of 102. Later, we'll hear about Ball State University's involvement in the Brain Gain Initiative, an effort to bring educated professionals back to Indiana. But right now, the 2020 legislative session is in its fourth week, and there's plenty to talk about. Here with us now is State House reporter Brandon Smith. Hi, Brandon.
Hey, how we doing?
Not bad. So, first, the House passed the hands-free driving bill. What does it say?
So, it's designed to be fairly simple, which is if you have a phone in your hand while you are driving, police can give you a ticket of up to $500. It's a Class C infraction. So that could be low.
$500?
Yeah, it could be a low fine if you don't go to court and try to fight it and anything like that. But it could be up to $500 if you really push it. They've been working on this language for a while, and they being lawmakers, prosecutors, police, a whole bunch of advocates to try and find something that makes sense, that's enforceable. Because that was the problem with the state's existing texting while driving law, which is it was basically impossible to enforce.
Mm-hmm.
So there's been some shock at how easy this has moved through. It was 86-10 was the vote in the House, but it seems to be sailing through the process.
And it's pretty broad support. Obviously, it has the support of the governor. But I'm having trouble understanding what Republican Jim Lucas said about it. He doesn't really like the bill too much.
So Jim Lucas is one of the libertarian-minded Republicans in the General Assembly, and his whole deal on a variety of subjects is that he doesn't believe the government should dictate individual behavior. So I think if he were around when we passed the law that requires you to wear a seatbelt, I doubt he would have voted for that.
Mm.
It's that kind of ideological bent. Like, he acknowledged when he got up to speak on the floor, like, I know this is going to pass. I know that the idea is good, but I don't believe the government should be doing things like this.
Ah, okay. Well, the governor signed a bill to spend some money on building projects. We've talked a little bit about this. Democrats think it should have gone elsewhere. What are we talking about?
Yeah, this is when the last budget ended last year in June, the government had $300 million roughly, more than it expected to.
Mm-hmm.
And so rather than just putting that in the bank, the governor decided, hey, I want to spend this. And Republicans in the legislature backed him up. And what they want to spend it on is they're going to pay cash for some college university building projects, so to build buildings at various places around the state. They want to pay cash instead of bonding those projects.
They were going to do it anyway.
They were going to do these projects anyway. But they want to pay cash instead of bonding because that'll save you about $130 million over the next 20 years in interest payments. So that's pretty nice.
Mm-hmm.
Democrats have said, well, that's great, but we're going to be using these buildings for 30, 40, 50 years. We should be paying for them for a while so that we can focus our money on other things that we need right now. Teacher pay being perhaps chief among them.
Mm-hmm. And teacher pay is something that even the Republicans have said, hey, we'll tackle this next year in a budget year.
Yeah, the party line is not in a non-budget year, which
okay.
is what we're in.
And just one abortion-related measure is going to get through this year. Which one are we talking about?
So this builds on the 2016 law that said all fetal remains have to be either cremated or buried. But that applies to medical facilities only. So if you go in for an abortion and there are fetal remains, the medical facility has to treat them like they were human remains.
Mm.
What this bill does is just kind of build on that because that case was argued – that was a lawsuit over that law. It went all the way up to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court last year finally said that part of the 2016 law is fine. And so now the state wants to build on it by basically creating – rules for how these medical facilities need to do this, about forms they have to fill out, what they have to tell the woman, the patient in the case, and that sort of thing. So it's compared to the last literally four or five sessions in a row, this is a very minor abortion-related bill.
But some other ones have been proposed for this year, correct?
Oh, sure.
There
are always a few, particularly – I mean there's one lawmaker I can think of, Representative Kurt Nisley, a Republican up from the north part of Indiana, who proposes a total abortion ban, criminalizing abortion actually this year. That bill never gets a hearing. It really doesn't get looked at by leadership. They just don't want to do that at all.
And so this is headed to the Senate floor. Does it seem like it has the support to make it through?
Absolutely. I mean, abortion bills in general usually do, or anti-abortion bills in general usually do. But this one is even picking up votes from folks who sometimes vote against those because it really doesn't do much other than we're already requiring this in law. Now we're just setting up the kind of policies, the process for how you have to do it.
Tell us about this bill restricting underage marriages.
Yeah, that. So in Indiana, if you're under the age of 18, you have to get parental consent to get married. You can get married as young as 15 in Indiana if you're pregnant. This bill would change that entirely. You can get married under 18, but only as young as 17. And they've thrown out the parental consent part because we heard from a lot. We heard from women in the committee hearing who testified they were child brides and their parents enabled the marriage to abusers. Mm. Like these parents were not good, to put it mildly. And so what the new policy would have been is you go before a judge if you want to get married under the age of 17, and you have to prove to the judge, both parents do, or both people in the couple do, you know, you're self-sufficient. You can hold down a job. You have your own living environment, because essentially we want to be able to make sure if this doesn't work out for one of the parties, they have to be able to get out. Mm. And if they can't get an apartment, if they can't get a job, that's impossible to do, as we heard from some of these women. So that would be kind of the new process if the bill were to become law, which it doesn't look great right now because it came up – it hit an obstacle on the House floor because Democrats proposed an amendment – wrote an amendment, I should say, that just took out language in the marriage statute in state law that currently still defines marriages between a man and a woman. It's irrelevant. It's because of the Supreme Court cases that have been decided in the last few years. So it has no purpose in state law, but Republicans didn't want to have that fight on the floor.
Ah, okay.
So they killed the bill just so they didn't have to talk about gay marriage.
Interesting. All right. Let's see. Well, who's behind that one, I guess? Whose idea was that?
This comes from Representative Karen Engelman. In part from victims.
Oh, okay.
Some of the women.
Some of the same people yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it seems like the Indiana State Senate is taking issue with Marion County Prosecutor Ryan Mears. What's going on here?
Yeah. So Marion County Prosecutor Ryan Mears unveiled a new policy. Well, unveiled a sort of official policy last year, which he talked about on this program, which said that Marion County is no longer going to charge people for simple marijuana possession. It doesn't think it's worth the time and the resources to do so, even as marijuana is still illegal in this state, unlike two of its four neighboring states.
Mm-hmm.
There are some in the state Senate who really don't like that. And so they're trying to take to basically retaliate against Mears by saying the state attorney general, Curtis Hill, a Republican, could come in and prosecute those cases instead and then bill the county for it.
Do we really think that would happen, though?
Absolutely. If this bill were to become law, I would be stunned if Curtis Hill doesn't try to prosecute marijuana cases in Marion County. It's an ideological thing there, and a political one, quite frankly. Whether this becomes law, though, is a lot less clear because even though the bill passed committee, there were multiple Republican senators who voted for it in committee who, as they were voting for it, said, I don't really like this idea, but I don't like Ryan Mears' policy, so I'm going to move it along for now. And the line is reserve my right to change my vote on the floor.
Right, right.
It'll be really interesting to see if this ever even comes up again, because sometimes that's what happens. A bill goes to the Republican caucus. They talk about it in private, and then it never sees the light of day again. This is a candidate for that to happen. Or it could pass all the way through the process, although I know that the House isn't super duper fan of it.
Yeah. And I thought it was interesting when I was reading your report on it that Dave Powell from the Indiana Prosecuting Attorney's Council, he expressed concern about it. He said that he kind of drew the comparison to filing the death penalty. He said he's filed the death penalty three times throughout his career, but he knows of other prosecutors who have never done so because they don't believe in it. He's basically saying that discretion is part of a prosecutor's job.
I mean, he describes prosecutorial discretion as their holy grail. Mm-hmm. It's an incredibly important. And there have been bills way in the past that have dealt with the state coming in and sort of overriding prosecutorial discretion that have not made it through the process, again, for these same sort of reasons. reasons. There's a fundamental, like there's a separation of power, checks and balances kind of aspect to it that some are just not comfortable with.
It doesn't really seem to me like Ryan Mears was trying to make any kind of point with this. It just seems to me like Marion County is the most populous county. And so therefore, if he's flooded with these and maybe he wants to spend more time on other cases, that then maybe that's why he wants to do it.
I can't speak to what was in Ryan Mears' head, but if he wasn't trying to make a point, then he didn't do it well, because I think he made a point. I mean, yes, the reasons he laid out for why he wants to pursue this policy also make sense from a resource kind of perspective, but I think he's also making a – I think a lot of people took it to – making a point as well.
The highway speed cameras bill got changed. What happened this week?
Yeah, so we heard all of these concerns last week when the bill didn't get a vote about privacy, and that's why I'm not going to vote for it. And they didn't really change those parts of it. What they did do is they restricted how many places these will go. So the previous bill just said we can use highways or speed cameras in highway work zones. Now it's truly just a pilot program where the Department of Transportation and not the state police will run, and they can only put them in four work zones across the state. So it's going to be a very limited, you know, set of circumstances where these will actually go in. And I think some lawmakers were a little more comfortable with that, with the idea that, well, let's see how it works. We're not going to put them everywhere. Let's see if, you know, people do slow down going into these zones, and if there are any privacy concerns that pop up from just four groups of cameras.
Oh, okay. So a little change, maybe
something.
A little
change, but it did move the bill along pretty easily, and we'll see if it, how much farther it gets.
And Indiana's longest serving lawmaker is not seeking re-election.
Yes, South Bend Democrat Pat Bauer has been in the General Assembly for 50 years. That is the longest serving lawmaker, not just currently, but in the state's entire history. In fact, there isn't a lawmaker either federally or at the state level who has served for longer in Indiana than Pat Bauer. And he announced that he will not run for re-election. I think some of us kind of expected that because we knew he was going to hit the 50-year mark this session. But this is a guy who presided over significant tax reforms to Indiana, including helping create the state's earned income tax credit. He was the Speaker of the House as well as the Minority Leader, which is both good and bad because he also presided over the, I would call it, infamous House Democrat walkout in 2011, where they left not just the General Assembly, but they left the state of Indiana for 5 weeks during session to try and stop a right-to-work bill that ultimately got passed the next session.
I remember it. State House reporter Brandon Smith, thanks for stopping by.
Thank you.
Up next, speaking of retirement, one state employee is finally hanging it up at age 102. We'll talk to DNR surveyor Bob Vollmer, who's gotten international attention since he announced his plans to leave the job he's held since 1963. I'm Matt Pelzer. We're back in 90 seconds. This is All In. This is All In. I'm Matt Pelzer. Just a quick thank you if you've been listening to our podcast. We post it every afternoon, and since the Senate impeachment trial has been bumping our show across most markets, we've had to shuffle some things around. But this past Tuesday, we did a new show that we really loved. If you haven't heard it yet, we welcome Pulitzer Prize-winning writer Deborah Blum, author of the book The Poison Squad, about Harvey Wiley, Purdue's first professor of chemistry, and the crusade he undertook to expose harmful food additives and food fakery at the turn of the 20th century. You can find it wherever you get podcasts. Just search All In and look for our blue and black logo. Well, he's been all over national news the last couple of weeks, and it's easy to understand why. The extraordinary story of Indiana DNR surveyor Bob Vollmer. He's finally retiring at age 102 from the job he's had ever since the Kennedy administration. And he's with us now. Mr. Vollmer, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for listening to me.
So what's all this attention been like for you?
Why? Well, I'm wore out, for one thing. I appreciate it. I think it's wonderful. It isn't very often when I get to tell some of my stories, because I've done a lot of things in my life. I've worked hard. I remember I grew up during the Depression. Food was short. A lot of people were starving. People went fishing a lot. You didn't go fishing for a sport. You went fishing to eat, so you could eat. You had to watch your pennies.
Well, you made it through the Depression, and then you fought in World War II, and that took you to the South Pacific, right?
That's correct. Yeah, that's absolutely correct. You see, when the war was coming, it was pretty obvious that there was going to be a war. So some of the fellows that we ran around with, we said, well, there's going to be a war. We're going to be in it sooner or later. Let's get ready. So we would go down around Petersburg and those strip mines down there and practice long-distance swimming. And we thought, well, if we get in a troop ship and get sunk, we might have a long swim.
That's some forward thinking.
Well, really, that's what we did. We'd always take a case of beer with us. and those strip mines were pretty deep, 28 foot so. And you'd have to learn how to tread water real good. So say, throw me a cold one. And you didn't want to lose that beer naturally, so you drank the beer while you were treading, and then you went swimming again. You learned how to swim long distances. You didn't ever use the overhand stroke because that'd wear you out. You would use side strokes, and then you learn how to float and rest for about 10 or 15 minutes, and then start swimming again. Actually, this sounds a little ridiculous, but we did it, and it helped save my life one time overseas when I was putting in a communication line between two islands in the South Pacific. And I'll never forget that, but I had to swim about 10 miles.
Oh, my goodness.
The only reason I made it, I had all this practice. I knew how to do it. I knew how to rest. And there were sharks out there. One guy, there's three of us. One guy didn't make it. When you get out in the ocean and you're swimming, you kind of separate. Well, three of us, we separated when we hit the mainland. Well, one guy didn't make it. We don't know what happened to him. He might have drowned, or maybe a shark got him. I don't know.
Oh, my goodness.
But I never forget that. My dad told my brother and I, he said, well, I don't like war. We don't believe in war, but if we're going to have it, he said, I want you two boys be the first ones over the top. Of course, my brother, he didn't make it.
Yeah, he didn't make it, did he?
No, but so many guys didn't. God, we lost thousands and thousands of good men.
Well, and as I understand, part of your retirement is going to be to kind of go back there where you lost friends, including
your
brother.
That's right. I want to go back to visit some of the cemeteries, and I just want to look them over, that's all. We built some gun emplacements, and I want to see if they're still there.
Well, your job, it's pretty physical. It seems like the kind of work you've been doing is probably contributed to your longevity. Surveying's a pretty physical job, right?
That's correct. A lot of people ask me how I can live this long. I think about it a lot, but I don't know for sure. I've guessed at a lot of it. I think a lot of it is our diet. My grandma was a great cook. I know one thing, my grandma, she had a big garden, and she raised a lot of red beets. About every other meal, we had red beets.
They get old after a while?
You'd think you'd get tired of them, but you didn't, because they were good.
Yeah.
My grandma said, eat these red beets. That's what makes your blood red. Of course, we know grandma didn't know exactly what she was talking about. But if grandma said that, that's the way it is. But I don't know. I think part of my longevity is because I don't smoke. I never have smoked. I always thought it was stupid. I still think that. But the doctors told me my lungs were real good, and that's one of the reasons I'm still here.
Well, I'm curious how your work has changed. I've seen some pictures of you with some really modern-looking surveying equipment. I just wonder how many times you've had to make big technology adjustments, computers, cell phones. Have there been changes in your job over the decades that you really weren't crazy
Absolutely.
About?
Absolutely. when I started doing this, we our surveying habits were much different. You use what we called a chain. It was 100-foot steel tape. Today, everything's electronic measurements, more accurate. One thing that I think helps me, most of my surveying is in the boondocks around state forests and nature preserve places where you have abundance of trees. And you got to remember that these trees are very necessary to our breathing. Our trees discharge pure oxygen. When I'm out working in the trees, I can breathe better. I have noticed this. That's another reason we want to preserve our forest, because without our green trees, we're not going to have much oxygen. I'll tell you that. That's part of the Department of Natural Resources, of course. All the resources that we protect, including our oxygen, of course, we have water. They're all very necessary to our living, and we got to protect these things. And the Department of Natural Resources, they do a wonderful job.
When was the last time you bushwhacked up a hill? That you did a hill climb out in the boonies?
Oh, I guess about a year ago. My leg has been giving me problems. I have one my leg. I have a lot of titanium in it, and I think it broke loose or something. But at my age, I'm not going to worry about it. But I can't climb the hills like I used to. Heck, when I was a young punk, I used to go out to California and climb the mountains out in the High Sierras. That was one of my hobbies. I climbed Mount Whitney a couple of times.
Oh, wow. But
my legs are starting to fall apart now. I can get around, but not like I used to. Maybe I'm getting too old.
Okay, well, I understand that there were some days that were a little more memorable than others. You're dealing with property lines, which people can get defensive about. Have you ever been threatened on the job?
Absolutely. I've been threatened. I've been shot at. I've had people stick their dogs on me. You bet I have. But I tell you, that never did bother me. You learn how to handle that, too. Oh, I can tell you a lot of dog stories where people... One time a guy was encroaching and we built a structure on state property. He had a mean dog. He didn't want anybody to know where the monument was. So he put his doghouse over the monument. Of course, it was hard to find, and you couldn't hardly get near the doghouse or the dog would take you. The only way you could get near the doghouse was to start chainsawing. The dog didn't like that. He'd move a little bit then, but, oh, yeah, We've had a lot of people, not so much anymore today. People are getting accustomed to knowing that we're going to get them. But we've run across a lot of bad situations before.
Well, I want to hear more about this Al Capone story.
Well, that's a true story. Now, I got a call to go up at Bass Lake, up in the northern part of the state, and there was a chain link fence up there. It was blocking off the people's access to the lake. And to make story short, I went up, looked the situation over, and on this chain link fence, there's a lot of signs up there, metal signs, City of Chicago, keep out, City of Chicago. And I thought, what the hell here? This is Indiana, you know. But the people started gathering around and wanted to complain. And I picked out the leader, and he seemed to be the leader. And I talked to him. It's like I just mentioned before, he is a very polite guy. One of the most polite guys I've ever talked to, especially when you had a problem and you thought maybe somebody's going to jump down your throat. But this guy was unusually polite.
And he was a gangster.
That's right. I didn't know it until after it was over, but we made a deal. He was easy to. All I had to do was be honest. I didn't try to pull his leg. I told it the way it was, as straight as I could be, And you have to be reasonable with these people. And if you are, you're going to get along with them. And but anyway, when I got through with him, we made a deal. It was acceptable to the department and also the people up there. And then I found out his name. His name was Tony Esposito. He was Al Capone's lieutenant.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, well, that's the truth. And he was a very nice guy. He invited me in the house. We talked about Tommy guns and all that. And he was free to talk about this. And he told me some things that, of course, like I say, he was a gangster. He had his job to do, and I had my job to do. But we got along real fine. And he brought out a jug of whiskey.
There you go. We're talking to Bob Vollmer. He's a Department of Natural Resources surveyor, and he's about to retire at the age of 102. And because you work for the DNR, I mean, some of my favorite places in the state are, of course, state parks, which are under the DNR's jurisdiction. What are some of your favorite places in the state, some of the most beautiful spots?
Some of the most favorable places are along the Ohio River. One of our new parks is down in Charlestown, and that's along the Ohio River, some of the big bluffs up. My God, it's a beautiful place. And not too many people know about it yet. But of course, the dunes is a wonderful place. I like the dunes real well. There's so many parks that are, they're all great. Down at Spring Mill, it's so unique. They have those caves of blind fish, and I particularly like that because I have a relative that worked on blind fish a long time ago. He went to Germany, studied a little bit. His name is Twitty, Dr. Victor Twitty, and he lived in Alfordsville. And if you look at him on the website, it's Alfordsville. It's a town near. It's near Ligoti. Because then he said, "Well, then where's Ligoti?" But Dr. Twitty, he's a distant relative of mine, and he did a lot of work on the blind fish. And I guess just being around Spring Mill State Park, where they have all the blind fish in those caves, it kind of gave me a little more interest in the place, but it's a very unique park. But all of them are good. There's something good about all the parks. The park system, when I came aboard, the park system was run down pretty well. But now the Indiana state parks are one of the best in the nation. They run them right, just like all the divisions. When I came aboard, the law had game wardens, and they weren't too effective. But when Don Foltz became our first director of the Department of Natural Resources, he changed all that. The law enforcement people, he changed all that. Now they're professional conservation officers, very talented, wonderful people, and it's so much different. The whole department is professional now. At one time it wasn't, but I can see the changes coming up gradually. And it all started back when Don Foltz said, I knew Don Foltz. I knew him up at Purdue. And he said, I don't care whether you're a Democrat or Republican, but I want people who are qualified. From now on, we're going to have qualified people. And he's the guy that started us up to professionalism. And today, most of the parks are very, very good. And Fish and Wildlife Division, for the parks, hell, they're all run the way they should be run now. Indiana, we have a good system here. But I've seen it grow. I've seen it go from nothing up to a great organization. Like I said, we have a darn good state. Indiana's one of the best states in the union, not only because of academic, we have so many good schools, but we have good leaders, we have good people. And I don't know. I like Indiana. Of course, the reason I came back, I was going to school at Berkeley, California. Some professor talked me into coming back. And
we got you back.
And we're in the black, too. We're not a lot of, like a lot of states, we're in the red. Indiana is financially sound, and we want to keep it that way. And I think we can. We've had good governors, and we've still got good governors, and I'm proud of them. That's the way I look at it. But I've been lucky all my life. I've got a lot of people to thank to help me. And if I could continue with the luck that I've been having, I'll have a good retirement.
Bob Vollmer is a surveyor for the Indiana Department of Natural Resources for just one more week before he hangs it up at the age of 102. He's a Sagamore of the Wabash as well. Bob, you really are an inspiration. Thank you for your service to Indiana, and thanks for your time today.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. And whatever I told you, that's the way it is.
I don't need your rocking chair.
Up next, one company's partnership with the state to bring in or bring back educated or qualified talent to Indiana. We'll get an update from Ball State University's Vice President for Governmental Relations on Indiana's Brain Gain Initiative. 6 months in. I'm Matt Pelser. We're back in 90 seconds. This is All In.
You can't put this possum in a cage.
This is All In. I'm Matt Pelser. Last summer, Ball State University announced it was joining IU, Purdue, Notre Dame, and Butler, as well as a number of Indiana's biggest companies, in an initiative to bring educated professionals to Indiana who maybe grew up here or were educated here, welcome them back, bring people here who have maybe never considered Indiana as a stop in their career. And we're at about 6 months since Ball State's announcement, and we wanted to check in on how this Brain Gain initiative is going. So we're glad to have Ball State's Vice President for Governmental Relations, Becca Rice, with us. Hi, Becca.
Hi.
So why does Ball State think we need a brain gain?
Well, it's an incredibly important initiative for us. As a state-supported institution, this is really our opportunity to give back to the state of Indiana, who's given us so much, but also to serve our alums in a way that's a little bit more targeted to the types of things that they're interested in. TMAP provides... they have a database that
TMAP is the company that we're working with.
Yes,
to kind of target. So how does this work? They're targeting recruitment to people who maybe were educated here, and they're saying come back.
Absolutely. So TMAP came up with the Brain Gain Initiative, and they, based on if the folks grew up here, if they attended college here, a number of different factors. They've identified, I think, up to this point, about 1 million folks who may be willing to come back to Indiana. And of those folks, are reaching out with partners such as Ball State to folks and hoping that they'll come back to the state of Indiana. If there's interest, then they start to think about working with the employers. They have all sorts of employers who have interest in hiring these people back to Indiana. And so they work with TMAP to determine where good fits are. These aren't entry-level jobs. These are for professionals who are advanced in their career at all stages. And so it's really not starting over and coming back to Indiana. It's finding that right professional fit for growth. And so it serves our alums well. It serves the state of Indiana well, because we know we are at a low in unemployment, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. And so it's important that we find those great opportunities for our alums so that they continue their growth path here in Indiana.
So I guess aside from joining the initiative, which Ball State and mm-hmm. as we mentioned, a number of universities and companies have done, what does that mean when you join the initiative? What do you then have to commit to doing at that point?
Absolutely. Well, it's a wonderful, wonderful partnership. We began in August last year with an email to our out-of-state alums. We reached about 13,000 alums with a message from President Mearns, sharing that Indiana is a wonderful place full of opportunity and advantages to live and work here, and inviting them to submit some information that would go to TMAP so that they could begin the process of matching them with employers. We had over 100 alums submit information. at that point. And so they are working with those alums who have expressed interest. It could be interest in coming back as soon as they're matched, which, of course, is any job process is, you know, not immediate, but it takes some time to find the right match. But folks could say that they're interested in coming back in the next 2 years or when they're ready to start a family or those sorts of things. And so they have a massive database that can help our alums. And, of course, we're looking forward to the next phase of our efforts with TMAP and the Brain Gain Initiative. So we will be reaching out actually today with our in-state alums who are employers who may have an opportunity to hire some of these people who are interested in coming back to Indiana. And so we'll reach out there. We're also going to reach out later next in the coming month to alums from specific colleges that the folks at TMAP have identified there's a lot of demand for. So we'll have Dean Paige Turner from the College of Communications, Information, and Media reach out to alums there, as well as Dean Steve Ferris from the Miller College of Business reaching out to alums from that college, and there are plentiful opportunities for those. And as those come in, we'll work with other deans where we've identified lots of opportunity for those alums as well.
So I guess when I first heard about this, I'm thinking, okay, so they're going to target ads to people and things like that, and they're not going to get maybe direct communication with people. They're just going to say, hey, there are jobs here. Come back home. But it sounds to me like you're getting actual commitments from people who are like, yeah, I'd consider coming back to Indiana and show me the incentive.
Absolutely. Well, I think, you know, on one hand, the careers themselves are great opportunities. Perhaps they want to come back to the state because not only are there wonderful opportunities and advantages to the state, but also maybe they have family. Perhaps they want to continue their education. There's a number of wonderful opportunities to continue your education at Ball State that we're happy to share with our alums and others. But also, it's an opportunity to engage with the university that they love. One of our key messages is that our future is bright and you're a part of it. And so those alums are a part of it, whether it's coming back to campus to work with students, to mentor students, whether it's coming back for help with their career services, with resume or practice interviews or those sorts of things, or it's engaging with other alumni groups. We certainly want to create a variety of opportunities for our alums so that they can be a part of all the great momentum happening at Ball State right now, too.
What about the students who haven't yet graduated? I know that Ball State has a number of out-of-state students. And is part of this initiative sort of reaching out to them saying, hey, by the way, why don't you just stay in Indiana? Is that sort of actively happening, or are we just talking about reaching out to alumni?
Absolutely. So we have a lot of very intentional efforts with our Office of Career Services, whether it's engaging the folks who are coming back through TMAP or other alums who have been engaged with us in a number of ways. But it's really important when our students are on our campus to make sure they're aware of a number of opportunities, that they have opportunities to network and engage with employers across the state of Indiana. The more that they know is out there and the more they understand how that Hoosier hospitality and mentorship works in the state, the more that they will know that they have great opportunity here in the state. They can fly anywhere. Our alums are receiving a world-class education, but of course we want to make sure that they fully recognize those opportunities to do so here in Indiana.
So of the companies that are involved in this, we're talking about big companies. I think Lilly is involved. There are a number of big Indiana companies. And so their role in this, I'm assuming here, and correct me if I'm wrong, is, hey, we just want to hire more Hoosiers who are currently out of state or people who were educated in Indiana from out of state. I know you can probably only speak to Ball State's role in it, but do you know anything about how they approach it? Are they targeting their recruitment out of state?
So I think workforce is a huge discussion here in Indiana. And, you know, part of that is making sure that it's a great place to do business. There's so many advantages to being in Indiana, but you've got to have that workforce. So they are working in several different ways, some of them through TMAP. And, you know, making sure that those opportunities are available so that as folks who want to come back to state are aware of those opportunities, some of that's engaging directly with us. We encourage all the engagement we can from employers across the state who are interested in engaging with our students we're hiring our alums. It's not just, you know, posting a position anymore. It's really making sure that students understand what an opportunity means and can see themselves in those opportunities. And that happens through more informal engagements such as networking. We do escape rooms with alums. We have our faculty who have so many great opportunities to guide our students and help them understand opportunities. They're doing externships at different employers to learn how it is in today's world, the skills that they're teaching and are fitting in today's careers. And that's incredibly important for our students to think about those outcomes, both academic and employment types of outcomes, and think about how they fit in today's workforce and, frankly, to tomorrow's as well.
I guess I'm also thinking of maybe Ball State, maybe comparing their role in this to the role of the big companies that have signed on to this Brain Gain initiative. Whenever a faculty or a staff position opens at Ball State, do they take this into consideration? Like, well, let's maybe gain some brain back and hire people who have maybe graduated from here, from out of state, maybe target some of those folks.
We certainly want the most qualified pool that we can get, and we want to make sure that we are reaching as far as we can. We love to make sure that we are getting folks who are interested in staying in Indiana. If they, just like the people who are targeted through the Brain Gain, have a link to Indiana, you know, we've been fortunate to hire folks who want to stay in the community and stay in Indiana, which is important.
I want to maybe try to understand a little bit more about TMAP's approach. This is a tech company in Indianapolis, mm-hmm. and this was kind of their idea. Have you kind of sat in on some demonstrations of like how their system works? Maybe how their is it software based? Are we talking? We're talking about targeting. We're talking about targeting ads and marketing to recruit people to come back to Indiana. I guess how are they doing it, to your knowledge?
So they're doing a lot of data mining to determine who it is may have interest. Where is the low-hanging fruit? There's a lot of low-hanging fruit if there's some sort of link to Indiana. If you attended college, if you were lived in Indiana at some point, if you have family in Indiana, all of those are factors. And so they're reaching out through partners, whether it's universities. I think TechPoint had a big partnership with them to bring folks in the tech fields back to Indiana, which is wonderful. And, you know, I think as we're learning, when you have a message that's more targeted to a targeted group of people, they know it's for them. Mm. And so a broad campaign is great, but the more that people can see that you're reaching out to them and there's an opportunity for them, the more they realize that benefit of filling out the form and putting their name in the database. And the more people who do that, also the more employers realize that there will be a bank of employees waiting for them. And so they are working really closely with partners to get the word out. And I think it's a wonderful approach.
You talked about the phases of this. And it sounds to me, whenever I hear phases, I think, okay, so they're going about this the right way. They're setting these realistic goals. So I guess what is the goal of the current phase and what are the goals of the upcoming phases, which I'm sure, since you're going in phases, have sort of yet to be worked out?
Absolutely. It really is an iterative process. We want to make sure that we're learning from each of our phases, and as we hear from alums, what it is that they're interested, what it is that motivates them to come back. I think that will play into what it is. I think as we hear more from TMAP, what sorts of opportunities are available from employers, it'll help us to target different groups of alums as well. But I think also, you know, it's one of those things where you see a message once and it may not be the right time in your life. But if you see it 6 months later or 6 months after that, you know, it's one of those things that goes from something in the back of their mind to this really could be an opportunity for me or for me and my family. And so we certainly want to make sure that we're hitting that message more than once.
We're talking with Ball State's Vice President for Governmental Relations, Becca Rice, about the Brain Gain initiative that Ball State joined up on, 6 months ago now? And Becca, I guess my follow-up to that would be, what is sort of the current tangible goal? Is there one? Do we want to reach this many people by this time, or is it a little bit more broad than that? Is it a little tougher to quantify, I guess?
It is a little tougher to quantify. Our first campaign in phase one of that reached about 13,000 alums, and I think perhaps I mentioned about 100 of those alums have contacted TMAP to say that they're interested in hearing about more opportunities,
mm-hmm.
which is great. But when you look at TMAP's overall statistics, we know that this is a long process and finding the right match. So, they've worked with, they've contacted about 225,000 people. Over 5,000 have responded, but the group then gets smaller, and there's about 500 people that they are working with to match with companies actively at the moment. Now, that number is going to continue to grow as people begin to visualize this as an opportunity for them. They expect the number of targets to double in the next year from about 1 million to 2 million. And we think we'll see the same types of growth, obviously, for just one institution, so not in the millions. But we certainly want that to be in the back of all of our alums. We have 197,000 alums. About 71% are in the state of Indiana. So that leaves somewhere just south of 30% that may have desire to come back here. So
I guess we hear a lot about brain drain in Indiana. And of course, this is the counter to that. This brain gain is what we're talking about. What do you think other states have that we don't? Why are we always talking about brain drain in Indiana? And maybe some other states may not even be in their vocabulary.
So, you know, we certainly hear things about landscape, but, you know, I might just flip this a bit to say what we do have. We are fortunate to have a number of wonderful both public and private institutions across the state of Indiana, and we educate a lot of folks well. But what we don't do well is make sure that they know all about the opportunities in Indiana. And this is really a great turning point for us to think about it very intentionally at institutions, both to bring people back, but to, you know, as we talked about a bit earlier, really be intentional about making sure we highlight those opportunities for the students who are on our campus now. And so that's something that we're working on. I think it's a partnership with employers. Employers are working harder to make sure that their workforce needs are filled and that, we've been humble Hoosiers in a lot of ways. And, that's something that I think is changing because we should be very proud of the what we have here in Indiana. It's a wonderful place to do business. It's a wonderful place to live. And there's a lot of folks willing to be mentors and employers to people who want to come back.
I guess I shouldn't be surprised that you flipped it. You talked about the landscape, and I'm guessing you're talking about the fact that it's flat in northern Indiana. We don't have mountains and things like that. We don't have this beautiful scenery, depending on where you look. And there's
right.
a lot that we do have to offer. How do we sell ourselves better? I mean, you look at some of the things that other states are doing. Tax incentives and things like that to attract people and businesses. What do you think that Indiana could do to kind of help out this initiative in those ways?
So, you know, actually, Governor Holcomb has been very thoughtful about this. It's not just, and we've done a lot in recent years to make it a good tax climate for business, but it really is time to start selling Indiana. It's a wonderful place to live. Tourism, you know, there's so many great places to visit in Indiana. It's a beautiful place if you know where to go. And so there's a lot happening in the state of Indiana to make sure that we highlight those things. But it's a great place. It's an affordable place to live. There's opportunities. There's, Hoosier hospitality is real. The desire to allow people to be involved in their communities. It's the idea that it takes one person is really very real in Indiana, whether it's making an impact on your community, which is something that's important to our institution, as well as, you know, if you're here to work hard, you're going to do well in your career.
She is Ball State's Vice President for Governmental Relations, and we've been getting an update on Indiana's Brain Gain Initiative 6 months into Ball State's commitment. Becca Rice, thank you so much for your time and best of luck.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Our producers are Drew Dodlin and Maggie Galon. Scott Cameron's our managing editor. Our show is engineered by Adam Gross and Chris Flood. Subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts so you always know what we're talking about. Join us next time when we'll learn about a new Indiana State Museum exhibit opening this weekend. It's called Fix, Heartbreak and Hope Inside Our Opioid Crisis. We'll talk with people behind the project and an exhibit contributor who's lived through addiction. That's Monday. In the meantime, find us on Twitter and Facebook at All In Indiana. I'm Matt Pelser. Thanks for listening. This is All In.